Hello and welcome everybody to the first Star Ledger podcast alongside Connor Orr. I'm Mike Vorkunov. We're making this thing up as we go along. We still don't have a name for it.
Yeah, we'll take suggestions though.
Yeah, if you want to tweet out suggestions to at Connor T. Orr or at Mike underscore Vorkunov, we'll listen to them.
Nobody's going to do
that. If they're as bad as mine were and Connor shot every single one of mine down, we're going to ignore yours too.
This was all predicated too on getting Jorge Castillo to come on here too, because I think that having Jorge as like the lead name on something would be way better than, you know, Mike and Connor just isn't like, it's not an attractive way to start like a branding, you know?
Yeah, and plus he gives us a little, you know, he gives us a diversity of thought.
Okay.
All right, Connor, so the whole premise of this thing is going to be, you know, we're going to talk about the big things going on this week. So this week it's baseball and it's the Masters, and we're going to have Star Ledger columnist Steve Plitty on in a little bit to talk about the Masters and Augusta and then also New Orleans, all of which he got to revel in this week, and we are ridiculously jealous. At least I am. But for now, I guess we can talk about the baseball part of it. The Mets start off tomorrow at home. The Yankees, and we're taping this on Wednesday, and the Yankees start off Friday in Tampa. And the big Mets news is they just gave John Neese a 5-year deal. Thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's tremendous, you know. They're really, they're aiming for the future, you know. This is not a now thing, right? I mean, that's what they keep telling everybody, so. But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's smart. I mean, he's a good young pitcher, right? I mean, it's not, there's not going to be, like, a sexy move out of that camp, I don't think, for a while.
I think that speaks to where the Mets are right now, is that yeah. John Neese is their kind of, their big contract of this offseason. You know, they're getting over the whole Bernie Madoff saga, and that ended in March, as you eloquently wrote about.
Ended tremendously for them,
right.
Really.
I mean, they could even potentially be in the black, right?
Well, I mean, kind of. I mean, if they make all that money back, which I think they've always said that they can make it back about half, and they asked for 178. But if they make all the 178, they have to, like, disperse that to the pool as well. I think they don't expect to make that back, but yeah, I mean, all things considered, from having to go down from a $1 billion lawsuit, that's pretty tremendous.
But the only downside for them is now they're in a stacked NL East division with.
Nah, they're going to finish in third place.
Really?
The Mets are going to finish in third place.
Who finishes fourth and fifth?
The Marlins and the Braves.
Wow. You don't like the Marlins with Hanley and Giancarlo?
No. Someone told me, though, actually. I said this out loud in, I think, a Giants press room before the playoffs, and somebody said that might be the dumbest prediction I've ever heard anybody with, like, half a brain make, even though I'm not claiming to have half a brain, but.
But you are claiming the dumbest prediction you've ever heard anyone make.
It might be, but if it pays off, it's going to look pretty sweet, you know? I think they could, you know? I mean, it's whatever, Moneyball, you know, that whole thing, right? Or they're still doing that, so.
Yeah, they're still doing that whole Moneyball.
Sure. Yeah, but the Marlins, half those guys are going to get hurt, you know? Those guys all get
not
hurt.
Not Giancarlo Stanton.
So new how name. Can you say he's not going to be hurt?
He's got a new name, but he's still hitting 40 home runs this year.
See, that's the thing, man. Everyone said last year that Adam Dunn was going to hit 35, 38 home runs, and he didn't. He forgot how to swing a baseball bat. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, Adam Dunn doesn't want to make some kind of LSD home run structure in center field go off every time he does it.
I didn't think about that.
That's a big incentive.
It's pretty awesome, too. Actually, I heard a lot of people dogging it, too. I was listening to The Fan on the way in, and they called it ridiculous or something, like, even worse than that, worse than ridiculous. But I think it's kind of cool. I mean, if you're trying to pack people in.
I think it's awesome.
I think you get, like, 200 people there alone just to see that every night.
I think the only prediction worse than yours is that I actually like the Marlins' new logo and their new uniforms. I think they're great. I love the rainbow part of it.
I think as long as they stick with the orange hats, because that's sort of that sort of just underscores the whole ridiculousness of the situation. You know, I mean, at first it kind of looked like a bad 80s uniform. But then I think now the orange hats make it look like a far worse 80s uniform, which just kind of ties it together, you know? It's very like Astros.
Well, it's very
70s.
Miami Vice.
I guess it's like, it's a, if you combine like the inspiration for Miami Vice, like the stylistically, and then whoever came up with the Astros uniforms in the 70s,
I actually wouldn't mind seeing them play a game in, like, you know, those boat shoes and roll up their sleeves and have some kind of crazy turquoise uniforms with a suit blazer over it, Don Johnson style.
I'm sure Jose Reyes was a big Don Johnson guy.
Who wasn't?
True.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. I tend to disagree. I think the Mets are going to be in for a struggle with how stacked from 1-5 that division is. And I don't think the Mets are a bad team, you know, categorically speaking.
Well, I mean, you got, here's my thing. You got a Phillies team that's talking about small ball. I mean, we don't know when Ryan Howard's going to be back, and Chase Utley's not going to be back until at least July. So then you got your two big boppers that aren't going to be around. And then, but they did pick up Juan Pierre, who's the greatest video game fantasy draft left fielder available after the 20th round in the history of baseball.
But, and wears a baseball cap pretty well.
Yeah.
I have to say.
Yeah. But, you know, they're talking about small ball now, and they kind of play in that bang box park. But at the same time, I mean, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen there either. And, you know, the team that I really do like, those Nationals, I mean, I think I'm kind of on that. I'm pretty steadily on that bandwagon, especially, like, the atmosphere when they call up Bryce, you know, later on in the season. That's going to be, it's going to be a pretty
bigger
cool
than
place.
Strasmus?
It'll be like a combination of Strasmus and Harponica.
I was going to say, because he's not starting just once every 5 days. You can have it go on and on.
Is there a way that you can combine Bryce Harper and Harponica to sort of...
I think Harponica works pretty
Harponica,
well.
Harponica, yeah.
Harnica?
Strasmus and Harponica.
We'll work on it. We'll figure it out by the second podcast.
Maybe that could be the name of our show, just Strasmus and Harponica.
Again, if you have name ideas, tweet Connor T. Orr. I've decided I don't want to deal with it. But the Yankees the Yankees are in a different boat because they seem to be the favorites in the AL East, even though that's stacked as well. But they're coming off 97 wins, I think, last year. And the Red Sox with 90 wins, and the Rays got in on the very last day. But the Yankees seem to be well-equipped to weather all of that.
That division is just awful. I mean, like, who would want to play in that division? It's just so good.
I was gonna, when you said awful, I was like, are we watching the same baseball?
No, I mean, just awful is it from a competitive standpoint. I mean, you know, if you're another team, I mean, that's just got to be terrible.
And the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean.
The Blue Jays aren't bad.
You could just stick the Blue Jays in another division, and they would be a good, like, a really solid team.
If baseball could add another wild card, you could just take, really, the entire AL East along with the other two division winners,
exactly.
And you'd be fine.
Yeah. But I think the thing that amazes me about the Yankees year after year is, like, that how much the acquisitions sort of blow up once they actually get back east. I mean, if you know, like, the, let's say, like, the Mariners acquired Kuroda, I mean, it would be, you know, that's a sound acquisition. That's good.
We've had disagreements about this. I like Hiroki Kuroda.
I think he's a good
2-3 starter. Have you seen his FIP and his XFIP?
Yeah, well, I don't know what that is, but sure, I'm sure it's readily available.
We'll get Andy McCullough on. He'll explain FIP and XFIP to you.
That'd be great. Because I don't have that appendage to my dictionary, my AP style book. So,
It's gonna be in the next 2013 edition.
2013.
Okay. Yeah, I should have included it in our fantasy league.
That's true.
If we had an XFIP, I think you would have just quit right on the spot.
If you lose, but if I beat you in fantasy baseball in the next couple weeks, the podcast is just gonna, you're gonna do all the work, but it's gonna be named after me. That's what I decided.
As opposed to now, where I just do all the work.
Right.
All right, I think that's enough.
Like your editor and producer.
I think that's enough blathering from us. I think we should have on Steve Plitty now.
And someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
Yes. All right, and let's welcome on to the first podcast, our very first guest, the Star Ledger columnist and the star du jour, Steve Plitty. How you doing, Steve?
Doing great, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well. What's the weather like down there?
You know, it's actually quite crazy. It was pouring, of course, during the 5-minute walk I had from the Augusta Press Center to the car, and now it's sunny. I mean, that was 50 minutes ago, so I can't explain what's going on here.
Do you think that's the gods of chauvinism clearing things out a little bit?
I mean, the court is drenched, so it's got to have an influence on what happens in the tournament.
Do you think that's the gods of chauvinism kind of clearing things up a little bit, or...
I don't think there's any question that the folks at Augusta National decided that they didn't want any women here, so they were going to make it rain, so they could go away.
Let's start with that. I mean, how weird was that today? I mean, because reading what you wrote online, it seemed like there was some pretty palpable tension, and the media were kind of hammering them pretty good.
Well, was, and the best part about it is it really is a significant home field advantage for Billy Payne. I mean, you know, it's his club, his tournament, his room. He's got his own, you know, guy sitting next to him who pretty much can pick out where the hard questions were going to come from. But apparently he failed in that duty today because he took it from all sides. I mean, you know, it was, and really they brought it upon themselves. I think, you know, when you sit up there in front of this acting on media, and you're going to say that we want to help change the world in golf and make an impact and increase the number of the people playing and all these bold initiatives, and we're going to do our part. I'm sorry, you're opening yourself up to the question, like, okay, well, why are you excluding 51% of the world's population from your club? I mean, you can't be talking inclusion and have this exclusionary policy. So he took a lot of shots. It was fascinating. I mean, you know, Karen Cross from New York Times asked about him, what do you tell your granddaughter? And then Dan Wetzel followed up. Oh, we don't talk about your granddaughter. How about my daughter? What should I tell them? I was like, one more, I get a follow-up question. I would have been like, all right, well, how about any young girl? It was great.
Are you surprised at how badly they can bungle this, considering the Masters and Augusta are so good at controlling the optics of the entire tournament, and it is on their home court, and yet on this very issue, compounded with what happened last year with the Tara Sullivan incident, that they're so bad at controlling this, and they can have such a huge PR hit?
Yeah, I mean, it's just stubbornness and arrogance and the combination of the two, you know. I have to believe there's so many smart men in Augusta that there's got to be, you know, a bunch of them are like, look, let's get this over with. We're going to do it. It's going to happen. It's, you know, and it's not, I can sit here and write about this. I get 50 emails from people like, they're a private club that can do whatever they want. Well, they're a private club that happens to be, you know, one of the most influential bodies in a sport. You know, this is not some club that goes about its business, you know, Pine Valley, and just leave us alone, you know. They bring the cameras, they invite the attention, they say they want to take an active role, and when that just opens yourself up to this. And, I just wrote today that they have such an opportunity that if they did this to make a statement, but they just don't see it. And you're right, it is amazing how poor they are at the PR side of it.
I'm just wondering, with the fireworks already starting today in that press conference with Billy Payne, the tournament starts tomorrow, but before we get to that, what are you having for dinner tonight? For anyone who may not know, you share a house with the star ledgers Brendan Prunty, as well as Wright Thompson and Dan Wetzel of Yahoo. And I think Brendan's been tweeting out pictures all week of the different gumbos and sausages and meals that he's been having. What's on the menu?
It's really Twitter is like now become a vehicle for broadcasting your bad habits to the world. Which I find,
is that what Brendan's like, doing? Did you call him out on it?
We had the big pot of gumbo yesterday. I believe they're going shopping for shrimp. I don't know what that's going to be. And there's going to be steaks one of these 2 days.
Nice.
I'm not on the dinner committee. I'm on the booze committee, and there'll be plenty of tangare as part of that. my responsibilities.
Who is the best cook? Who is the best chef in the house out of all those? And if we're missing anybody that we didn't include,
Roy Thompson so far has done the best job with the cooking. I think that's his Mississippi roots. He's the guy. He's the go-to guy. On the grill, I like to think that I can hold my own. And then when it comes to opening beers, no one's better than Fronty.
Figures. St. Joe's guy.
Well, that's a shot. He's got to get a chance to answer for himself one of these days after that shot.
Yeah, you know.
But it's all right. I guess tomorrow the tournament, we're taping this or on Wednesday. Tomorrow the tournament does start. Tiger Woods and his resurgence is the big story of all this. You wrote a column for today's paper talking about how it's time to finally root for Tiger. And he's going, I guess, as much as everyone loves to build the good versus evil narrative against Rory McIlroy this week. Is that the best storyline of the week?
I think so. You know, I mean, just because what happened to Rory last year when he shot an 80 on the final day and, you know, the way he bounced back in the next major went to win the U.S. Open, and he's just like a compelling guy to watch because it's just such a beautiful game, a powerful, fluid swing. You know, I walked with him a lot down here in Augusta and nearly the entire U.S. Open. It was just brilliant to watch. And, you know, I mean, I think Tiger, the fact he's playing better again, and you know, I play with that column, and again, it's funny, people are still so, you don't have to, it's not an endorsement of what he did. It's just feeling like, all right, well, let's take the foot off the guy's throat, let him become a golfer again. I mean, you know, I think it's a better sport with him competing. I think it's much more interesting than watching, you know, Carl Schwartzel slip on the green jacket. You know, no offense to South Africans, if you're listening. You know,
we have a huge South African presence on this podcast.
And it's kind of been unfair that he struggled with the injuries because, you know, even Jack Nicklaus said it. You know, he doesn't want his record to be broken, but he doesn't want to see it happen because Tiger can't play. And I think that finally maybe we're seeing that Tiger can, you know, that he can play again and he's whole again. So I hope that's the case.
Hey, Steve, when we get all those angry emails from our South African listeners, you all right if we just forward them straight to you?
Absolutely. Go right ahead. Yes. I'll answer them the same way I answer all of them.
You wrote today. I mean, I thought it was kind of like a good way to sum it up. I mean, when that book came out and they're talking about a guy not sharing a popsicle with Tiger, you know, with people, I mean, This is obviously a book that made him very uncomfortable, but should it have been based on the substance? I mean, it seems like if you have stuff like this in here, it just seems kind of ridiculous and sort of lowbrow, kind of an attempt to make some cash.
Yeah, but there's a lot of other stuff in there, too. It wasn't just the, you know, I mean, also about he got injured doing the Navy SEALs. That was a big focus of it, you know. A lot of little details in there that, you know, obviously you had to make Tiger uncomfortable. My point was, you know, who's Hank Haney without Tiger? I mean, is there no appreciation for what him hiring him did for that guy's life? It just kind of shocked me. It's like, you know, it seemed to me that he would not be a millionaire with a TV show on the Golf Channel without if there wasn't some help from Tiger Woods bringing him on and trusting him with his swing and his confidence. And clearly, that didn't matter much to old Hank.
Well, kind of with the whole popsicle thing, hasn't, in, like, slighting Tiger Woods become a little bit of a cottage industry? It's whatever way you can find.
Sure. Did you see? It's amazing. Did you see, the three porn stars that he's alleged to have dalliances with? And that's using that word, no way anybody probably would. They're making a movie about the supposedly is reenacting their exploits. I mean,
really?
Yeah, I forget the name of it, but it's pretty funny. You're right. It's become a cottage industry, and it's just a little over the top. You know, he screwed up. If you want to hate him for the rest of his career, you know, he brought it upon himself. I just couldn't help but, you know, feeling during this. It's like, you know, enough is enough. I'm just going to cheer for the golfer and you know, hope, because I think it's better for the sport. I think, you know, he certainly paid the price for what he did.
There's certainly probably a pool of tremendous potential titles for that movie. I mean, if you just think of face surface bad movie titles,
yeah,
especially in that genre, I mean, it's just got to be so wealthy with opportunity.
You should try some of those out right here on your podcast.
We'll leave that one for the deleted scenes, or maybe put the extras on iTunes or something. I don't think we can get away with it in the first podcast.
Yeah, we might have to establish this first before we can start talking about that.
So what about the other big name with Rory McIlroy? You know, what is it like for him coming into this week, considering the way he broke down last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be different if he didn't just bounce back when he was over the next time around. He looks comfortable, looks confident. You know, he's handling it different this time than he did last time. I guess he's coming with, last time he came with all of his cronies and they hung out and they, you know, threw the football in the street, and it was really just a great story until, you know, of course, that blew up. Now he's coming with his business manager and his family and everybody around him. So it's a little different environment for Rory. You know, I imagine that his game is so good and he's so young, and I think you can shake that off when it happens to you at 21 much easier than you would if it happened to you, like when you're Greg Norman and you've already been here 15 times and then you blow up. So I'm guessing he's going to be okay.
Does that tree now have some kind of, like, cultish, mythic appeal?
It does, yeah. I mean, it's funny, Brenda stood up there for a long time just watching people walk up to it. And I remember walking out there the day it happened and seeing the security guard and having him point to where it was. And it was like this, you know, this serene little area between these two perfect white cabins and the ceiling fan, and one of them was spinning, and someone left the light off and the other light on the other one, and it looked like, I mean, then you see the picture of him standing there, and you look back, and it really is amazing. You look back at the tee box going, you could, if you gave me a bucket of balls and a 7-iron, I couldn't get it there. No one could. Tiger could. It was just like an impossible place. So it really is funny to look at it now. I think even he said he looked up the side as he was walking past and just laughed.
Well, I think, based on my perception of Augusta, I mean, and I know you guys kind of wrote about what it was like outside of the actual country club last year, but the thing I'm curious about is, has it changed at all in the year since you've been back, and have they tried to at least kind of bump up that town around the club at all, or is it still kind of the same sort of atmosphere?
No, it's pretty much the same. I mean, this is my 10th year, which I couldn't believe that when I was thinking about it. Washington Road is just strip malls and chain restaurants, and you know, I should point out that there is like a college-y eclectic downtown area that unfortunately is just a bit further from where we stay now to, you know, that we don't go there a lot. But you know, I mean, it's just really just a southern town. It doesn't have a lot going for it. You know, then you drive down Washington Road, and all of a sudden, you know, you drive past, right? There's no like walking. If you didn't know where you're going without the obviously the signs for parking and all that stuff, you would never see it because you can't. I mean, there's no place you can go outside the course and look inside. It's just amazing the way the fences and the trees and the dense shrubs and you know, and then you walk inside and it's like the prettiest place on earth. I mean, I'd love to just stand in certain places and walk around and sit in the veranda. It's just a really cool place to come.
Obviously, the course itself is beautiful, but I'm just wondering, because I don't think we ever see any TV shots of it, what's it like inside the clubhouse or the club itself? I imagine just opulence on top of opulence, like, just, I can't even imagine the type of expensive marble they put on the floors.
No, it's the exact opposite. Understated, you know, pictures of former pros. I mean, obviously everything's nice, but it's just like an old clubhouse with wood. And, you know, obviously I have not been into the inner sanctum. I mean, apparently there's a wine closet with, you know, wine that will never be open because our former members died and left it there. So I can only imagine what some of that wine should cost. But, you know, quite to the contrary, it's understated, and this little veranda, you know, they have it right over where everybody stands and mills, and you can, I'm just stunned that we're still allowed as media members to go up there and have lunch. And Wright was there a couple years ago. We went up there and actually was getting dessert, and they said that they, you know, ordering the cava, which is delicious, and they came and said, gave him a check, and so you'll have to go now. Mr. Nicholas needs your table. he said, what happens? You go, all right, you then. You know, there's no argument there. He's got six green jackets. So
you're finishing off what may be the best week and a half of the year, I think, in my opinion, because you're coming straight from the Final Four, and this year it happened to be in New Orleans, and the Final Four is always raucous, but what was it like in New Orleans, in and outside of the arena?
Oh, it was, New Orleans is a great city for it, because, obviously, you want to, like, the whole point of the Final Four for fans is to go back and feel like you're in college, and, you know, where can you do that better than New Orleans, so, and they had four pretty good, well-represented traveling fan base. I mean, obviously Kentucky swallowed it whole, but Kansas travels well. You know, Louisville fans, I think it came because, you know, you could actually, that's drivable. I mean, a lot of people, it was a longer drive, a lot of people think they did it. Ohio State, you know, a big university, so they were well-represented. So it was fun. I mean, the town was definitely a fun place to go. I think there's got to be, they really need to reconsider the no last call. I mean, you can drink, and you can get kicked out of a, like, like slip out of a bar at 5:30. Not that I would know this, you know, my own experience, but you know, it's a very evil place up there.
Is the Kentucky fan base, I mean, from seeing it up close and seeing them in this kind of atmosphere, are they as advertised as far as kind of the level of fandom that everyone sort of talks about?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You know, obviously you guys know I went to Carolina, so I would think I've got a good feel for rabid fan bases, but I mean, Kentucky's on another level. There's just so many of them. I think it contributes to that there's just nothing And I know, you know, Louisville, who fans flipped out when Calipari said that, but there's really nothing else in the state. Other, this is it. There's no pro teams. You know, Louisville's well represented, but I bet you it's 50-50 Louisville fans and Kentucky fans in Louisville, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's nothing like it. I mean, even for North Carolina, the state is half NC State. Even now, I mean, it's pretty well divided. It's incredible how well they travel, how into it they are, how much they know about it. It's a passionate place.
So, I mean, walking the streets of New Orleans, what was the most memorable scene or memory you remember from the weekend?
I there's nothing like that was absolutely totally crazy.
Did you hear the one about Norlin Knowles, who's the top prospect? He said that one Kentucky fan offered his wife to him if he went to Kentucky.
Was she attractive? I mean, that.
I don't know. He turned it down, so I don't know if that speaks for itself.
That's an important question, though. I didn't even think to ask that part of it.
Yeah, but I'm guessing Kentucky's reputation would probably be offering more than that anyway. Oh!
Hello!
Here all the week.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's good.
What was
The fun thing about Kentucky is it's just, I mean, they're going to lose six players, and they have a chance to be back with Final Four next year. I mean, they're just going to recruit at this level where, you know, they figured out how they just change their team over every year, and they've got enough talent coming in that it's like, Jack Calipari has mastered this.
Were you impressed with, I know this being a Star Ledger podcast, we would probably have to ask about any New Jersey connections at all down there, and wrote about Kid Gilchrist. What did you think about him when you met him, and what kind of player do you think he can be moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, it's funny because I remember in high school having conversations with other coaches who didn't think he would be an elite college player just because he got you know, so much done just based on his motor. He's not a physically imposing kid. He's 6'7", you know. So as far as the high Division I level, he might not be a great player. Obviously, all the more wrong. I mean, I thought, you know, there's very little question that had he played in a team with less talent, he would have had monster numbers. I think it's just part motor. It's just being very smart. He's just a very fluid. He's got good basketball instincts. And I was impressed when I did a column about it, just how he handled the fact that he's very shy and stuttering problem, and how he handles everything else that goes around him, which hasn't been easy for him, but he's just getting better with it. And I think that's, says a lot about the kid. And after I wrote that, you know, how many people you hear from know him and like him. And, you know, obviously the kid is very well liked around Elizabeth. And, he's going pro now and probably be top 3, top 4 pick. So it'll be interesting to see where his career ends up and how far he can go. I think if he's going to be a good pick, again, the guy who can do a lot of different things, he might not be a superstar like Anthony Davis, but he's going to be a solid 10, 12 year NBA player.
Would you be surprised if the other New Jersey freshman on Kentucky went pro early, the one you wrote about as well?
Yeah, I think he might be a 4-year. He might be a 4-year guy. He was a good story. I mean, it's funny how a guy like that averages 9 points a game and ends up walking out of Kentucky, but pays when your father knows Cal.
I guess because you probably have to go and get ready for dinner for what will probably, I don't know, dwarf anything Connor or I will eat. Although he had an amazing breakfast that he didn't stop talking about for 2 hours once he came
breakfast.
In.
Breakfast, yeah, Verona. Bagel shop in Verona, but, you know.
Nice. Sounds good.
Before you go, you want to give us a pick for the Masters?
Someone asked me to do it, but every year it's got me show of Augusta Chronicle. I asked everybody to do it, and he asked me, and, like, I always try to pick someone who nobody else has picked. So I went with Brant Snedeker because, for purposes only of Scrabble, if Schwartzel hands the green jacket off to Snedeker, that's a very high-scoring delivery of the green jacket. Although, now, after that, as soon as I said that, Brendan says to me, well, you should have picked Oosthuizen for the Z.
Oh, yeah.
My own formula picking the winner might be wrong. There's no way to tell. I think these guys are absolutely right with, you know, Phil was talking about it, how if the rain's like this, it's going to take away a lot of that local knowledge that the experienced players have about the greens and about, you know, how to play this course. So I think it's going to open the field up a little bit more. It's going to, you know, change the complexion of it. I think it could be, we've had a little run here of guys that you just didn't expect to win would win. So could be another year like that.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve. Thanks for coming on. We'll await your tweet later tonight to see what you're having for dinner. I'm sure Brendan will if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone will, because again, Twitter is like the new vehicle for broadcasting your bad habits.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Have fun in Augusta.
Get my pick on ticket.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve. It was great having you on the very first Star Ledger still yet untitled podcast. Connor, I think that's going to do it for us this week. Hopefully we'll get a second week. It was fun.
Yeah.
We'll do it again.
Sure. Maybe Jorge will come this time.
Yeah. Well, I think you didn't invite him, so that's on you.
That's a good point, man. That's my bad.
It's kind of like when we play basketball. We got to make sure everyone gets the invite.
It's true.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. And till then.
Au revoir.